from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today we'll bring you a group chat with young Milwaukeeans who are part of the Pearls for Teen Girls organization.
The sisterhood, I don't have too many friends, but like Pearls kind of help with that.
We'll speak with the president of MIAD as he approaches 10 years of leading the school. Plus, we'll look at what's in Milwaukee Rec's fall activity guide.
I'm excited about some of the partnerships we're doing with wellness this year. A lot of them are actually free, which is an extra bonus in addition to being able to get well and be well outdoors.
All of that is coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. We'll start today with Group Chat. It's our series that gets Milwaukeeans in conversation with each other, asking their own questions while we provide the mics and get out of the way. This month, we'll hear from a group of kids as students head back to school for another year. The group members are all part of Pearls for Teen Girls, an organization for Milwaukee girls that helps them develop social, emotional, and practical skills. Here they are talking about the things on their mind, like mental health, imagining a safer Milwaukee for young people, and a reminder that with age does not always come wisdom.
I'm Navia, and I go to DSHA.
I'm a Miracle, and I go to Milwaukee High School of the Arts.
I'm Dion Trunique, and I go to Milwaukee Academy of Science.
Okay, So what grade is everybody going to or are in?
I'm in 11th grade.
Me too, junior.
I'm a senior, and we all know each other through Pearls for Teen Girls.
Yeah.
We were all in the same group last year.
Speaking of Pearls, what is y'all favorite thing about Pearls?
It's just I never been in like anything like this, so it has a lot of opportunities. I love like the field trips and things like that. Like my favorite field trip was the one.
The Brady Corps?
Yeah, like the Brady Corps. I really like that. And we was learning like networking, media and things like that. The sisterhood, I don't have too many friends, but like Pearls kind of help with that.
Okay, so I joined in 8th grade. In 7th grade, it was, like, after, like, kind of COVID, because, like, 6th grade got cut in half. And then for all of, like, the rest of 6th grade and then 7th grade, I was virtual. Mm-hmm. So, like, I didn't talk to any of my friends. Like, I mean, we were emailing. Like, like we were emailing through the school Gmail. We were. Yes, we were. And when I, like, went to Pearls, I was scared at first because, like, I hadn't, like, really talked to anybody outside of, like, my mom. And, you know, so I was like, okay, like, I'm nervous. And I didn't want to go at all. But she made me go. She's like, no, this will be good. Like, it'll be great. Like, you'll have so much fun. You'll meet new girls. And I was like, okay. And so I ended up going. And, like, the first, like, day that I went, I absolutely loved it. Like, it was so much fun. Our PC was so nice. Her name was Amir. And Miss Amir was great. Like, she made the experience so much fun that I was, like, my mom, like, the next fall in, like, school year. Like, she was like, so, like, what are you thinking? Like, do you want to go back? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, I need to go back. Like, it was so much fun.
Dang. I have to think back. Okay. I was in, like, 6th grade. I wanted to be a Pearls girl. I used to see the 7th graders go in. And I used to go in. And then she would be like, it's too full. And I'd be like, dang. And then 7th grade year came about. And then I was able to participate as a girl. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened. Cut my 7th grade year in half, and we were virtual, and I had the time of my life doing virtual. We freestyled. We even made Zoom calls outside of the Pearls.
That's Zoom calls.
So I was like, dang, that's crazy. So not enough of Pearls or enough of school, but I want to talk about, like, society. What should adults know about us teens nowadays?
I feel like they think that, like, our brains are fried because of, like, our phones and stuff. Right. But the funniest thing about that is that we're probably, like, even more aware than they were at our age of, like, things that, like, go on in the world. Like, I can't obviously speak for, like, every teenager out there. I'm like, oh, everyone feels this way and everyone knows. Especially, like, I know, like, people I talk to, people I associate and, like, you know, surround myself with, like, the girls in my groups and stuff, whatever. We know a lot. We know a lot. We're not just out here just, like, being like, oh, la, 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 la. Like, we know things that are important and concerning of our futures, and we will take, like, you know, proper actions to make sure that we secure our futures and that we have the same opportunities or even better ones than our parents had.
Correct.
You know, sometimes I feel like there's just so many things going on in the world, and like I can understand like both a teenager's mind and an adult's mind when it comes to like going certain places. Mm-hmm. You know, your parents always want to protect you, but like I feel like in general that it's like, you know what, okay, I can just let my child do this and like just see what happens, because there's a point in time where we are gonna go into the real world, and we don't wanna go into the real world knowing, like, being clueless or like mm-hmm. anything. So I feel like, you know, parents should be like aware of that, because I know someone who has like a parent who's like very protective and like with them 24/7, because like they're scared of what happened, because anything mm-hmm. can happen knowing today.
Your voice is so soothing. I just had to say that.
Oh, it is, like, sure is. I'm like,
thank you.
Real closely. But no, I definitely agree with like what you're saying, especially because like I can definitely understand a parent's perspective of being like, you know, there's mm-hmm. so much that happens, so much yeah. dangers, more so now than like ever. So I understand, you know, wanting to like shield and protect your child. But at some point you have to realize that, you know, also like when you do that, you know, your child, as they grow older, like when they're younger, it's fine, because, you know, they mm-hmm. want to be around you. But as they grow into like those teenage years and stuff, whatever, you know, a little bit like, you know, resentment might start happening, because yeah. they feel like you're holding them back in yeah. a sense. And then when it comes to them making those big decisions, like, oh, going to college and stuff, mm-hmm. then they won't be prepared for that, because, you know, they were never left on their own or like meant to yeah. do the, or like let allowed to do these things,
gain,
you know,
some independence,
right?
Yeah. That's why I said I want to go to college in state, but not like in the city, because I feel like I need a sense of independence mm-hmm. yeah. type of thing.
What do you think exactly that kids from Milwaukee need?
They need resources. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of kids don't know like about the Boys and Girls Club or about PEARLS, but I feel like they need support, they need love. Everybody is so, like, separated. Everybody want beef. Everybody in a mob. Everybody want to go to war. But, like, in reality, everybody just need love and, like, coaching and support and just everything, like, a family consists of. Because I just feel like we really one big family, because everything is just so small here.
Can I piggyback off of what you said? I really yeah. like that about, like, us being separated. Because, you know, like, when certain things happen, it's, like, one specific group or, like, race is against another for some odd reason. But, yeah. you know, I just feel like it doesn't just have to be one specific group that, like, you know, just, like, yeah. comes together. We can all come
all
together.
All come together as a whole.
And I feel like that would make it, like, just so much better.
Milwaukee is diverse, but it isn't completely diverse. Like, I can see, like, the different parts of, like, the city. Like, I can go, like, to the side of town, and I can tell who lived there.
Yeah.
And I really don't like that image. Mm-hmm. That's why I wish, like, everybody, like, came together mm-hmm. as one.
It's really sad that we live in, like, the most segregated city. It's actually insane. It definitely, I feel like, and then that's another thing. I feel like our generation is, like, trying to break those, like, generational, like, bonds and curses. Mm-hmm. Like, we're really, like, not everybody, obviously, but, like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that, like you were saying, like, the discrimination thing, that won't blame the whole race because of something that one person did, you
right.
know? And that's what we need more of. You know, we need more people that are willing to just be open-minded about other people and other people's cultures and, you know, all their different things that come along with that. And so I definitely agree with what both of y'all are saying.
I feel like we spoke on this just a little bit, but I just feel like people be like, what's wrong with y'all generation?
Ugh.
And I just feel like I'm not a bad kid.
You're
like,
definitely not.
I just feel like I'm a great youth in this community. I don't feel like I'm bad at all. Like, why am I getting judged for what somebody else done did?
Exactly. Okay.
Like, why I can't go to the mall by myself and go get my own shoes? Like, what make you feel like I'm about to go in here and do something I ain't got no business doing?
Right. It's like, and I don't like when, like, they be like, oh, Gen Z, or like, mm-hmm. I hate being put in a specific category.
Why are you labeling me?
Like, I get like, okay, we have names for different generations, but mm-hmm. you don't have to like put that on me. Like on the news, somebody, like a kid could steal a car and they'd be like, what is wrong with y'all? Like, I'll be like.
But every generation does that to the generation like yeah. beneath them. Like yes. they're always like, oh, like we had it so much harder and you guys are all soft. And that's another thing. They say that we're so soft or that we're so sensitive, and sensitive in the way that they think of it as like, oh, like you're crybabies. Like yeah. everything just upsets mm-hmm. you. Oh, we can't say this because, oh, Gen Z, oh, are we allowed to even say words now? Mm-hmm. Everything's so offensive nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's been offensive. Yeah. It's just that like people are finally saying something and speaking up about it.
Yeah. They call us disrespectful too.
Yes.
I just feel like just because y'all wasn't able to speak up, that don't mean
doesn't
I can't.
Mean we,
I know that's
mean
so
we
real.
Disrespectful. My mom always tells me, she's like, you can speak your mind to adults as well. That's how I've always been raised. She just says, as long as you bring your points respectfully and you speak mm-hmm. respectfully, because mm-hmm. that is an adult. But like, just because I'm a child doesn't mean that I shouldn't have a voice or I should bend to your whims because you're older than me, because with age does not come wisdom.
Mm-mm.
Like, there are adults that I've spoken to and I'm like, oh, you're how old? Wow, that's really interesting. Because the emotional intelligence is definitely lacking.
No, literally. And then it's like, when I say age doesn't come with maturity, I mean like, it'll be people come up to me. People thought I was 18. I'm actually 16. And I'm thinking like, they're my age too, but they really like 20 something. And I'll be like, what's really going on?
Because we're so well spoken, so emotionally intelligent, so awake. In the sense that we understand the things that are going around us mm-hmm. more than they think that we do.
Okay, saying this, what would y'all want the world to know about y'all?
I think that, like, genuinely, like, I think that we will be the change. Like, what you were saying about, mm-hmm. like, groups and stuff. Like, groups like Pearls and, like, the Boys and Girls Club are very, very important. But I think a lot of, like, kids in our generation, like, they're like, oh, like, that's so lame. Like, nobody want to do that. That's... And nobody would like that.
And that's
oh
why you gotta
gosh.
Be different.
Heavy on
exactly.
that.
Be
yes.
different. Not a follower, but a leader.
And that, I think that when we invite like those kinds of people into our spaces or whatever, and they see, you know what I'm saying? It takes mm-hmm. a minute for it to kind of like, you know, break that kind of like stereotype. Oh my God, this mm-hmm. is so lame. Why are we talking about our feelings? Why are we doing this? You know, but once you're able that. To like get past that, mm-hmm. then you'll meet like some very interesting people, like people that you just saw them and you were like, oh, he's not that deep. And yeah. then, you know, now that you're like speaking to him one-on-one, it's completely different.
Yeah.
As like a Black teenage girl, I've realized a lot that in my family, like I go to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Not because something's wrong with me or mm-hmm. because I'm crazy, but mm-hmm. because everybody needs therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just how it is. Everybody needs somebody to listen to, somebody to talk to, share their problems with, get advice from. That's just how it is.
Correct.
And
mm-hmm.
they think, and when I say that, I mean like older generation sometimes will think of that as like a sign of weakness, or they're like, oh no, you only do that if something's wrong with you, or like
yeah.
you must need help if you're going. And it's like, that's not the case. Like you can just
so
go
now
in.
We're speaking on like mental illnesses with like older people not believing that younger people are allowed to have feelings.
Oh my God. And it's like, it's that quote that a lot of grown people say, and it'll be like, oh, you're young, you never been through anything.
I need people to really realize that when you think back on it, like kids experience stuff really young. Like I have anxiety, and I remember like I was thinking back the other day, like I was like, when was like the first time that I ever felt like really anxious about something?
Mm-hmm.
And like the furthest that I can remember back is when I was like 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's insane to me to think about. Like I was seven. Like, you know, you're supposed to be like playing with Barbies, running
yeah,
around a playground. Like,
ride your bike.
Exactly. So I was like, oh wow, it's really like insane to think that I was even feeling this way at like such a young age, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it's like so important to like kind of break those stereotypes and stuff, because kids can go through even more than adults. There are adults who have gone through mm-hmm. no hardships, nothing. And like, you know, God bless, that's great for them. I don't wish any hardships on those kind of people. But then, you know, you have children that have been through so much, you know? So you can't like use that card, you know, like they try to.
Okay, I have a question.
You guys, if you like, if like money wasn't involved, like you made like a whole bunch of money, like guaranteed, what would be like your dream career?
What I said, helping mm-hmm. the youth.
So you want to be a CEO of a business, of like a group like Pearls, or are we aiming for the CEO of Pearls? What's
of Pearls?
Okay, mm-hmm. okay,
we're gonna clock it.
Hey, I'll check back in 20 years.
20 years is crazy.
So, well, where do you think you're getting this role?
Sooner than you might know.
You know what? I believe in you.
If I just sit back and I just think about it, I want to get my master's. I don't know if I'm going to go as far as a doctorate, but for sure a master's, mm-hmm. which could probably be like 6 years.
You know, with the things that we like to do when we get older, or the jobs that we want to pursue when we get older, how do you think that's going to change the world just a little bit, you know?
Mm. Well, Dion's is already pretty influential, you know, just by her speaking it. I don't know if I want to be a therapist or a psychiatrist. I don't know.
You can do both.
Because, oh, girl, I don't know about that. Schooling is more on psychiatrists, but, like, therapy, you can, like, that's when you, like, talk and have other problems. Mm-hmm. Psychiatrists can prescribe medications and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I want to do that, if I want to be a therapist. But also, there's a lot more school that goes in, you know. Psychiatry. Yeah. So I think that I might just stick with therapy, mm-hmm. but I really want to be a youth therapist. Mm. And I don't know where I want to be or like where I see myself.
My brother needs you.
I don't know where I'm going to be or where I see myself. Obviously, like, I can see myself, like, you know, but I really want to focus on the youth because there are so many kids that feel so invalidated in their struggles and stuff because of their parents mm-hmm. or their elders, whether that be, like, intentional or not. And so I want to be, like, that person or that voice to be like, no, like, this is okay to feel this way. You know, mm-hmm. this is how we can get through it. You know, actually help them, you know, with these feelings before they, like, fester. Fester. There we go. Fester.
That's the word.
Yep.
Oh, me, you know, like, we all have different opinions on music because I want to be, like, a songwriter and I like mm-hmm. to perform on stage. I'm still coming over my fear, but, you know, it's okay. We're getting there. Now it's just, like, certain types of music promotes inappropriate things like drugs and, you know, like, sexual things, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, me personally, I just want, like, you don't have to like it. You can like it. It don't matter. I just want to make music fun again. Like, mm-hmm. that song by Ne-Yo and Pitbull, like, that's fun. Like, I want to make music like that.
So with my dream and my career, the way I feel like it'll change the environment, it'll give the youth something to do. It will also make them open to speaking their mind and, like, their feelings. Mm-hmm. And just, like, bringing everybody together as one is really what I want. Just to really stop the violence and limit, like, the crime rates and, like, the killing of the teens and mm-hmm. everything that's just in that category, I just want it to be, like, lowered or down to none if possible. That's really my goal.
I like both of y'all answers, you know.
I like yours, too. I can't wait to see what you do with this music. And Beyonce may be on your list, make the heat, and you might be famous.
No, for real, because when you become my favorite singer, like,
that was Navia Yarbrough, Amiracle Evans, and Deontronique Woodson. Group Chat is produced by Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez. In about 20 minutes, we'll learn what classes are being offered by Milwaukee Rec this fall. But first, we'll talk with MIAD President Jeff Morin about his tenure and how he's fought to keep the art school successful. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Next year, Jeff Morin will celebrate 10 years as the president of the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, known as MIAD. The school's roots go back to the 1920s, when the Layton School of Art was founded to create a progressive art curriculum. When Layton School closed in 1974, former faculty members opened MIAD that same year. 41 years later, Morin arrived from UW-Stevens Point to lead MIAD. At the time, the school faced a large dropout or transfer rate and struggled to reach new students in the city. Morin's tenure would see that trend shift with increased enrollment and changes to how the school served its students. Morin was recently profiled in the latest issue of Milwaukee Magazine in an article called "The Man Behind the Mission." To share more about his experience leading MIAD, Morin joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski.
Before we talk about your tenure at MIAD, I would like to get to know a bit more about you. Was art and art education something that you knew needed to be a part of your life from a young age?
You know, I've told this often enough that it probably feels like one of those fabled stories. I knew in kindergarten what I wanted to do. I've got vivid memories of saying it out loud, and that I wanted to be an artist and an educator. And really neither of those things were in my immediate family. So it came from something out of the sky.
I think that's a real gift, though. A lot of people, even adults today, like, we still wonder what we want to do, you know, when we grow up, right?
Well, even being in graduate school, and I did my graduate work in Madison, even though I'm not from the Midwest, I'm not from Wisconsin, having graduate roommates that still didn't know what they wanted to do, and they were 6 or 7 years into their college experience. It's been very helpful to have that, what feels like a very linear, straight line from kindergarten in Madawaska, Maine, to the presidency here at MIAD.
Would you say it not only gave you kind of comfort and reassurance, but strength throughout your life?
You know, both strength and maybe moments of crisis, because there were a few times there, because I pretty much paid my own way through college with very generous scholarships and grants. There were moments when that was really difficult to make happen or to realize. And those moments were a bit of crisis inflection, because this is everything that I wanted to do. This is the only thing that I wanted to do. And there were a few moments where it looked like this was not going to be possible to do. So great comfort and strength, but also moments of peril, because what happens if you can't?
Right. So did medium shift for you over time? I imagine you learned a lot of mediums yourself, but was there always a central focus for you?
Early on, and I mean elementary school, it would have been drawing. My mom and dad ran an auto body shop, and that's what I grew up in. Our hometown had a paper mill, and we would get rolls and rolls of seconds paper from the mill that my dad used to tape up cars to paint. There were always big rolls of paper around, and it was one thing that we just didn't have to be frugal about. And my mom, every once in a while, would just tell my brother and I, you know, why don't you do some sort of drawing competition? In other words, go find something else to do.
Go entertain yourselves.
Go entertain yourselves, because we lived behind the body shop as part of the same building. So they were always at work, and they were always home.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we were often in the way. But that just became, you know, like food, you know, food for creativity. And over the years, it's changed. It's evolved. When I went to art school in Philadelphia, I was one of a very small handful of people who majored in what was called interdepartmental, majored in everything, had classes in glassblowing and printmaking and graphic design and illustration and photography, because all I wanted to do was make things. And really, quite frankly, it didn't matter. I just wanted to make things.
So with MIAD, of course, with its role helping students here make things in whatever medium they want to specialize in, you're marking 10 years coming up in May as the president of MIAD. And looking back on your first days of your tenure, what was it about the school that drew you in to begin with?
Before coming to MIAD, I was at UW-Stevens Point, and I had spent 19 years there. So I'm not one who bounces around every other year from job to job building the career. I just got to the point in my career that I wanted to be able to really make decisions. Being in a larger bureaucratic structure, that's harder and harder to do. So I was purposefully looking for the next opportunity. And when the opportunity came up at MIAD, I was obviously very familiar with the school. I had been in an exhibition at MIAD years before about sacred spaces. I knew some of the people that work there through other professional contacts. And I was excited to be in a city again. I grew up in a small town, am perfectly happy living in a small town, but the energy of a big city was just invigorating. So for many reasons, MIAD seemed to make sense.
When you first arrived at MIAD, there was a 30% dropout or transfer rate for students in their first year. That, among other things, I'm curious, what did you see as like key challenges that you needed to prioritize and tackle in your first few years?
You know, we had what I would call a disconnect. People spoke passionately about what they did at the college. Great levels of dedication, quite a few alumni working at the college. And yet we seemed a little blind to the fact that a little bit over 30% of our students were leaving from the first year to the second year. Now, quite frankly, hopefully they were transferring and not just incurring debt and leaving without the credential. But if they were transferring and we thought we were wonderful and committed and dedicated, what was the disconnect? Where were we failing? And that really became a conversation with the faculty and the staff. And it seemed to really resonate with the faculty when they realized that, you know, 30% of the incoming class was never going to meet them because they left before they got into their major. They left before they got a deep dive into a studio area. And I think that resonated with the faculty. And within 2 years, we moved our student retention rate up around 85%, between 82 and 85%, which, being in higher ed for a very long time, to move a data point that much, that quickly, I think it showed everyone that, yes, we can do it.
How did you do that, you know, so quickly? What were some of the either methodologies or just changes you made institutionally or in the daily lives?
You know, we changed some things that were structural, but I would also say that we changed by simply having the conversation. One of the things that I speak to faculty and staff about, I mentioned it again at convocation this year as we were starting up, the concept of disinterestedness. It's an aesthetic philosophy term, and it's usually used as you come to an artwork. It's a piece of work that you might know intimately. What you try to do is see it as though you're seeing it for the first time. What do you see? What do you notice? What stands out to you? Even with something that is so familiar, you treat it in a blasé way. And I asked folks to start looking at the school in a disinterested way, not an uninterested way, but a disinterested way. What does it look like to come to your office? Is it welcoming? Is there space for the student to sit down? What do the hallways look like? Is there work up on the wall where they see themselves? What do all of those exchanges feel like in the classroom? And just framing it in that way, I think, caused some people to look at our community. And then it also allowed us to identify what was missing. Technology was missing. Some student services spaces were missing or hidden. We were used to the way that it worked. It didn't necessarily mean it was the best way to work.
Before students even come to college, whether it's MIAD or different institutions, and you yourself being the first in your family to attend college, you are really familiar with what you call the kitchen table conversation, and we've all had a lot of these. So for you, you define this as a very important moment for students. Can you explain what that is?
Well, it's kind of funny because I was thinking about that again this morning. In my family, we had kitchen table conversations because we didn't have a dining room. And growing up in a small town, growing up in a rural town, growing up in a family that couldn't lean heavily into their college experience because they didn't have it, I've become very sympathetic to other students, potential students that have to have that conversation. And I think especially here in Milwaukee, where we're looking to get the creative economy and the creative community to reflect the city, to literally reflect the people that live here, there are a lot of those conversations that have to happen. And we have to do our part to equip 16 and 17-year-olds to have that conversation. And we do programming in the community specifically for that. There are careers in the creative economy on which you can raise a family. There are careers that have very, very long, rewarding trajectories anywhere in the country, and most especially here in the city.
MIAD has grown physically, of course, with its campus, along with its student body, faculty. And of course, like many other higher ed institutions, this is in the face of budget challenges, shifts in college overall in the city and the country, and of course, COVID and the massive impact that continues to have. What's your approach that you believe has still made the work of MIAD continue and continue successfully?
Some of this is going to sound glib in the face of what we are facing. 500 nonprofit private colleges and universities have closed in this country over the last decade. We're averaging a college closure of one a week right now. So, you know, the work that we're doing feels like work done without a safety net. So we have to be very responsible. Every dollar is a real dollar. We have to think about every investment that we make. But I also think in the simplest of terms, there will be schools that will be successful and schools that won't. There are passionate people, dedicated educators at both of those types of schools. Everybody has to, in any way possible, be pulling in the same direction and be pulling in a direction. We know who we are as a college. We know who we want to serve. We offer a very limited menu of academic programs, and we try to map out what success would look like for a graduate in any of those programs. In the fine arts, it's going to look different from the path that someone would take in communication design or in product design or interior architecture. And those will all look different from the path that someone will take as a freelance illustrator or animator or fashion designer. Those are all in our menu of programs. Because of my personal background, I take it personally. I want people to know where they can go with this. And we're not perfect at it. We're not necessarily perfectly consistent at it, but it's what we're striving for.
Do you believe that paring down an institution's focus and having that clear mission is the way for higher ed to stay functioning and relevant and succeed?
I think it's one way. I definitely think it's one way, and I think that the narrative in higher ed has shifted over the last couple of decades. Liberal arts institutions right now are vulnerable. I still believe in a lot of what liberal arts offers, in that it gives students time to develop and mature and identify a pathway. But I think that there are a lot more either impatient people or people coming from stressed households that have to figure it out, and it sometimes feels like they have to figure it out quicker. So our students start in their majors in the second semester of their first year with their first coursework, because we know with the people that we serve, they want to get on with it. We don't have a lot of people changing majors at MIAD, because those students, maybe they didn't know in kindergarten, but a lot of those students knew before they got to MIAD roughly what they wanted out of their lives.
With MIAD being, you know, an art institution, what do you believe are some of the next challenges that are unique to you?
The college sits at this curious crossroads, and in Milwaukee, this is being amplified right now. We are a nonprofit, and nonprofits are stressed, relying on philanthropy, generosity of the community, and there are a lot of mouths to feed. We are in the arts, art and design. And if you look at some of our institutions in the community within the arts, they're stressed right now. And we are in higher education. And if you look at this community or this nation, higher ed is stressed right now. And I love what I do. Even sitting at that crossroad between nonprofits, education, and the arts, all of which look to make their communities better, it's invigorating, but as I said earlier, it's working without a net.
With all these challenges, and I know there's been a lot for you over almost 10 years of leading this institution, how do you stay grounded? What makes you stay connected to the students who are coming and doing the work?
There are moments where I get to feel grounded more. When I can return to the classroom, when I can teach. It doesn't happen as often as I would like. When I can get into the studio and make work, I still make work. Some of it is as a book artist, some of it is a printmaker, some of it is in painting and drawing. So sometimes you will see me in the building on campus and I will have a printmaking smock on. I actually take vacation days at MIAD so I can work in the printmaking studio because that's my vacation. Or maybe it's doing life drawing. I've always likened it to, for me to be able to have an afternoon drawing from the model is like the best piece of chocolate cake with cream cheese icing you have ever had from a diner. There's just something about it that's luscious and luxurious and soul-filling. If I can get into the studio every once in a while, that keeps me grounded.
Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me today to share how you've spent many hours leading MIAD and for telling us a bit more about it. Appreciate it.
And thank you for allowing me to tell their story. I appreciate that.
Jeff Morin is the president of the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. He joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. Summer is winding down, but there is still a lot to do outside in Milwaukee. Coming up, we'll tell you what's available in Milwaukee Rec's Fall Activity Guide. That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. While we're still basking in the glow of beaches, picnics, and long summer nights, fall is just around the corner. And with that comes the release of Milwaukee Rec's Fall Guide. You can sign up for classes now. Everything from family get-togethers at one of our local parks, dozens of different cooking classes, and even a workshop that can teach you about wasps. Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez is joined by Jessica Tipkemper, Milwaukee Rec's Outdoor Education Supervisor, and Thomas Shali Malone, Milwaukee Rec's Youth Sports Manager.
I have huge news. As you may have heard, the Fall Guide is now live, which makes me very happy. And I think, you know, I know you both have your specialties, and I was curious, what do you see filling up, or what have you heard that's filling up, or even from past history fills up quickly, that people should act now when they hear this?
For outdoor education, Halloween Glen is already filling up. I'm already working very hard on planning that event. That takes place Friday, October 4th, and Saturday, October 5th at Hawthorne Glen Outdoor Education Center. It's an event open to children ages 3 to 12 and their families. Costs $6 a person, $3 a person for our tike hike, which is half the length of the entire event, just for our people with smaller, shorter legs and maybe who need an earlier bedtime.
As far as the Fall Guide, on the sports side, tennis, semi-private tennis and family tennis always fills up quickly. Last year, we even added another session of family tennis to get more families involved. Driver's ed always fills up quickly. That's a big one. First day of registration, people are lined up out the door to sign up for driver's ed. And another big event that's happening this fall that registration is booming for is Run Back to School. Mm-hmm. That's our MPS 5K 1.5-mile walk. At the moment, we have 1,060 people registered.
1,060?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Okay, we're going to talk about this in a little bit because this is where you have me. This is where you are sending me, and I can't wait to talk to folks about that. All right, Jessica, I want to start with you and outdoor education. Is there anything new in this guide that we can talk about? Because I saw something about wasps, yeah. And I have questions.
We do a lot of partnering with different parts of Milwaukee Recreation and different sites. So I'm excited about some of the partnerships we're doing with wellness this year. We have some new staff in there who've been bringing some programs to the Glen to use the Glen really as a site for their wellness programs, which a lot of them are actually free, which is an extra bonus in addition to being able to get well and be well outdoors. So some of those programs are meditative walking in nature, a sound bath program.
Love the sound bath.
Forest breathing, and even guided meditation for kids. All of those are wellness programs. All of them are free, and all of them take place at the Glen. So I love the partnerships that we're having. We also do the Nature in Your Neighborhood programs, and so I think that's what you're talking about with the WASP program. That's actually at Hamilton and is their program. But we do go to sites like Hamilton and Riverside and Brenton and bring our programs to them. So we have some pumpkin carving programs at a couple different sites this fall for those sites. We also have an autumn leaves program that we'll have coming, and the autumnal equinox, that's actually at the Glen. One thing we're going to do this fall is called Seasons of Sensory, which is really looking to bring kids from neurodiverse backgrounds or backgrounds where they need a little support with their sensory needs, but they'd like to do that in an outdoor setting, which we know is really beneficial to some people. So we have some of those sensory programs at other sites already, like Beulah Brenton, but we're going to go ahead and try to pilot that this fall at the Glen. And I'd like to do more of that kind of work as well, because it's just reaching, you know, a broader segment of our population.
I love that. I also had a question. I just wanted to follow up. We talked about the Halloween Glen, which is this huge deal, and I'm hooked. But what else can you tell us about this kind of like can't miss fall event?
We've noticed over time that we've attracted a younger and younger audience again. I think it's just the size and scale, location. You know, if your kid needs to have lunch and then do an activity and get home for a nap, it's nice to just be able to do something that's pretty close. So I think that's why we've attracted more people. We had almost 800 participants last year, which is about typical, and it's mostly family. So it is a fun, non-scary, but educational event. So this year is our 31st year. You were right. It's decades in the making. And our theme is myths and mysteries. And it's really about looking at, on the serious side, misinformation and pseudoscience and how to kind of suss out, like, your perceptions of what a black cat is and are superstitions real or not, and how do we know, you know, if a stereotype is something we should follow or not, but in a very funny, very campy way. So there's 8 stations, probably takes less than a half an hour to do the whole thing. Super accessible for our younger visitors as well as other folks who just want a good time.
My goodness, that sounds like a lot of fun. I cannot wait. I want to ask you, Thomas, now there's also there are multiple big events coming up for the fall and for your programming. One of the things that we're going to hear from in a little bit is the Run Back to School event. But I wanted to ask you about the history of the event and kind of its importance as like students are getting ramped up to go back to school.
So this event was actually started 17 years ago by our current director of recreation, Lynn Greb. It's her baby, so I want to make sure that I do her proud. So the main focus in the event is to get everybody within the district ready to go back to school. So they found a good way to do that by incorporating the 5K walk, 5K run, and 1.5-mile walk. What we center the event around is to get schools to form teams to participate in the event. So we offer a $1,000 grant for the school that gets the most participants signed up for their team. And then anybody who has 25 or more participants signed up gets a $500 grant. And these grants can be used to promote any type of physical activity within the school building.
Okay, well, that's a call out. I can't wait to hear what happens and who wins this year.
My name is Andrea Taylor. I'm a proud parent at Congress.
My name is Ava Taylor, and I am a child that goes to Congress.
And you are also a cheerleader?
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell me like what this event is and what the experience has been like today?
It is a wake-up call. It is a reminder. It's a way to celebrate, to support the school that you represent and just MPS overall. It's a way to kind of get the rally going, get us excited again, shake off that summertime and get ready for the school time.
It's a time where people run, get excited for school, even though I'm not.
Can we get some Congress pride too? Showing up strong here today with the cheer squad.
I think that's exactly what's important. We are Congress proud, Cougar proud. We had our mascot out here. We had the principal out here. We had a couple staff members out here, and then the cheer team. So it's important that we don't just show up for our children and our students. You know, when school is happening, sometimes it happens outside of the school to show their support. And so just to get them amped up. But that's why I love Congress. I love the community. And so we showed up today.
We showed up to support other kids other than my school. Woo.
Paolo, Ruvivar.
Jeannie de Jesus.
All right, and this little one's name?
That's Jack.
So I was just curious, like, what brought you out today, and how long have you been doing this?
This is our first year doing it. We brought us out today as both our kids go to Fernwood, so we want to support the public school system, so that's why we're here.
What does this event provide for parents?
It provides excitement for the kids to go back. Our oldest, he was in summer camp at Fernwood, so he kind of was staying in the groove. So, but for us, this is his first year. And we're excited to just kind of get him, even though he's sleeping right now. We're excited to get him in the groove of, like, all the daily things that he's going to be doing.
And then I also have a big question on how did you all prep for the 5K?
There was no prep. I mean, we work out normally anyways. So I guess that's our regular prep for everyday things.
We're just walking. We're not running.
To be fair. We have a baby, so we can't really run.
And to be fair, we're going at my pace too. Like this is as fast as I go.
It works for us.
I also wanted to ask, how are the kids? Like, how can they learn more about this programming? It sounds like it's incredibly school dependent.
Yep. So each school has a sports coordinator, which is basically their athletic director. We provide the information to the principal, the sports coordinator, and have seasonal meetings with them to give them the information about the leagues that we're hosting. So it's really on them to push. We really try to do a lot through social media and through our Facebook posts to inform parents of what sports offerings we're providing each season. But it's really at the school level. We provide resources. We help them with equipment and uniforms when we can, because we know there are a lot of obstacles within the school building, and schools may not have the resources to provide these opportunities without us.
The other thing, Jessica, that I love about the Rec Guide is that there is so much senior programming. It's one of the places where I feel like the visibility matches our city's population. What in here has you excited as far as programming for seniors and outdoor education?
We've done a variety of things over time. One of our staples is urban gardening, which will continue at our Oasis building through the end of October. And we've had some really great participants who actually bring a whole lot of knowledge and experience to the program. And sometimes we're really learning from them as well as supporting them in gardening at our Oasis building. So some of those folks have also joined us for field trips to the Glen. One field trip that we're going to have this year that I'm excited about is out to Lapham Peak, and that's a partnership with the Ice Age Trail Alliance that we're working on building, where one of our naturalists from Hawthorne Glen and one of their naturalists from the Ice Age Trail Alliance will then meet with a group of our 55-plus, which is open to people of really any age, but we call it 55-plus, out at Lapham Peak to learn a little bit of that Ice Age Trail history. We also do a Great Fall Mandala program, also held at Oasis, as well as a craft of building a winter snowman palette. So I really enjoy when we're able to partner with our different entities within Milwaukee Rec to build a program that serves both, you know, both groups from both backgrounds.
So you both have your lanes that you do so well. Do you go through the guide also just as a fan? Do you have things outside of your specialties that you're like, oh, maybe end-of-life dueling is for me. Oh, maybe kombucha making is for me. Are there things in this guide that have piqued your interest, too?
Kombucha making does sound good. In fact, I think the woman who runs that program is running our Meditation for Kids program at the Glen. So I love those wellness programs that they're doing. That kind of is, I'm looking for that work-life balance. Yeah. So wellness always appeals to me. And those cooking classes always make me hungry because I'm often at my desk and looking through the guide thinking, oh, I missed my lunch. I wish I could have some Korean food right now.
Well, my mom and dad always sign up for rec classes. Every time the guide comes out, my mom goes through it, page by page to see what the offerings are. I usually sign my two daughters up for either semi-private tennis or some type of sport activity to keep them busy during the summer and school year. One class that I did see in the past that I don't think we offer anymore was urban chicken farming. Uh-huh. That was pretty interesting, but I think
I
missed that opportunity. It may still be in there. I haven't looked in a while.
Claire, this is a personal call out. Bring it back. All right, you two. Well, thank you so much for coming into the studios today and talking with me and sharing what's going on in the Fall Guide.
Thank
you.
You're
welcome. Thanks for having us.
That was Milwaukee Rec's Outdoor Education Supervisor Jessica Tipkemper and Thomas Jolly Malone, Milwaukee Rec's Youth Sports Manager. They spoke with Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez. And that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for being here with us. I'm Joy Powers. If you missed any of today's conversations, or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll learn about ways to approach conversations with kids about school shootings. Plus, we'll learn about the dangers of sitting too much and how you can stay active during your workday. That's all tomorrow at noon, right here on Lake Effect. On listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.